Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to Unblocking Crypto, episode 183. Hal, fun week. Should be a fun week at least after everything that's gone on last week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's tons of stuff. The bull market frenzy. And with institutions and stuff coming on board, it seems like it's a whole nother like vertical to talk about.
Yeah. Well, I know the price hasn't done great in the past week, but there's a lot of excitement. And I know we kind of talked about this White House digital asset report that was supposed to come out last week or 2 weeks ago, and it kind of ended up coming up last week. So let's talk a little bit about that. I know it is 160 pages long, so we're not going to go into all the details. There's a couple things that I noted. There's still no details on a strategic Bitcoin reserve. Apparently, those details are coming soon, but that's kind of a little bit of a disappointment, I guess, on my end. But there are a ton of policy proposals touching on several crypto-related areas, including market structure legislation, stablecoins, banking, illicit finance, and taxation.
Yeah, I skimmed through it and kind of got a summary of it. It just felt like a book report. You know, it's like it didn't advance the ball. It just gave you information. And so that, you know, it's like constant disappointment from the government. But, you know, you mentioned that there wasn't really anything on the strategic Bitcoin reserve. There was nothing on the summary of holdings from various government groups. So we still don't have, you know, what was in the executive order, which I find to be pretty annoying too. There was some pretty good stuff in there though. It started out with kind of an introduction, and they made parallels between like crypto and the internet and railroads. So I thought that was pretty good. And, you know, they did talk about self-custody, and that's one thing that it feels like they are kind of trying to protect. And maybe a year or two ago, that was kind of under attack. So that's worth talking about. There's a bunch of different, maybe 10 or 12 chapters in this thing. Some of them I didn't find to be all that interesting. You know, some just kind of described the ecosystem, or, you know, talked about the market structure and which entities had regulation authority over, you know, security tokens versus commodity tokens versus commercial or consumer tokens. And so, you know, it's kind of interesting if you really are in the weeds, but I just didn't find anything in there that was like, ooh, this is a juicy, you know, piece of information. Even under the taxation part, you know, basically they just said it needs to be cleared up. Like, yeah, man, we've known that for a decade, or like 16 years.
Well, it's funny, they talked about reporting foreign digital asset accounts in the U.S. So they're trying to discourage Americans from moving their crypto offshore. And I was like, this sounds like an exit tax thing, which Clinton kind of implemented just to keep money in the U.S. So don't do that. Just make it advantageous to keep it over here. And the crazy part is, I guess I kind of assume that if you have crypto, it doesn't really matter where it is, you're going to be reporting it in the country that you're in. So it's crazy that they're adding this in when it almost makes no sense to even make it separate. So kind of weird.
Yeah, not only that, I mean, how would anyone know where whatever servers if Coinbase has servers in, you know, Uzbekistan, how do I know? Like, yeah so I feel like that is a stretch anyway, because they've made it so hard for Americans to do business in exchanges that are outside of the U.S. Like, I feel like that's not even all that important anymore.
None of them will do business with anybody outside the U.S. Right. Or in the U.S., I should say, right? I do think they did talk about that the IRS and the Treasury Department should not impose any new reporting requirements on DeFi transactions, which is good. That's been something that we needed some clarity on for a while. And the other big thing that I saw was, I guess it's like trying to get the banking regulators to make clear pathways for crypto banks to engage in traditional banking activities. The whole master Fed account, whatever, that gives you access to the Fed services, and crypto exposed banks have had issues with that in the past, that maybe they're going to give them these master accounts access at some point, but that's one of those things I'll kind of believe it when I see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I was reading through it and I'm like, yeah, the taxation section, they do have their work cut out for them on the taxation. Like how, you know, the wash sale issue has been known for a long time. Like I used that in 2022 and you know, they don't really have, it's not very clear, but like how does staking income, you know, what are the reporting requirements there? But like smart contracts, like, you know, if you have a multi-year smart contract, when do you pay taxes on whatever those gains are? You know, multi-party signatures, hard forks, NFTs, they made a good point. Like there's a lot of freaking work to do, but it took them 6 months to write a report to say, here's the work that needs to be done. So, I mean, it might take them 6 years to actually do the work. Like, so I'm not very optimistic about stuff getting done. I was in the first few months of this administration when things were rocking and rolling and they were doing all this stuff really quick. I'm like, oh man, this might happen. Now I'm like, now we're back to normal. Like they're crypto friendly and stuff, but it doesn't feel like they're actually motivated to get anything done.
Yeah. I mean, they are looking at the Bank Secrecy Act and deciding if they should amend that with new language for the crypto industry. But I mean, all of that, the stuff we just talked about, at the pace that the U.S. government goes, will take years, if not a decade or longer at this point. So
I agree.
I'm not sure what's going to happen now. That being said, Paul Eikens came out and announced Project Crypto. So the SEC is kind of jumping into this and saying that they're going to move fairly quickly. And this Project Crypto is really this commission-wide initiative to modernize the securities rules and regulations to enable America's financial markets to move on-chain. And that sounds great. There's no details to it, but that would be, I think, amazing. And I think even like Bernstein, which is one of those asset managers that deals with wealthy people, they said the agency's new Project Crypto initiative marks the boldest and most transformative crypto vision ever laid out by a sitting SEC chair, one that could reignite domestic innovation and turn the U.S. into the global epic center of blockchain finance, which would be fantastic if that's the case. I'm hoping that that's the case. I guess I'm a little bit cautiously optimistic at this point.
No, it's like, just show me. Quit telling me what you're going to do. Do it, and then let's talk about it after you do it.
I mean, even the CFTC is kind of getting into the mix too. They're still waiting for their commissioner to get on board, but they're enabling this crypto sprint, and their plan is to implement some of the recommendations from the recent White House report, and they're going to work very closely with the SEC and this Project Crypto as well. But once again, there's really no details. They just say they're going to be working on it.
Yeah, well, they're not going to do anything in August. So see in September.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the good news is what they did do right before August is the SEC approved in-kind creations and redemptions for crypto-based ETFs, which is huge. I mean, we've been talking about that for a long time. Now, they did push the decision again for staking Ethereum in the ETFs. BlackRock had that request in, and they've done that. They pushed that request from a few others already, too. So at least they're doing something.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a move that kind of removes some of the friction that the ETFs have as far as going and basically moving their Bitcoin around in order to keep even with the underlying with spot Bitcoin. So that, I think it'll make it easier and less cumbersome for those guys. So it's, you know, advancement is good. I think it'll be interesting if they allow the consumer to transfer to exchange Bitcoin for ETF shares. Like that piece would be, I think you'd see a lot more things move, but like this is like under the hood, make things easier. So it makes the ETFs more efficient. I don't know that they're going to drop their fees because their fees are so low. So I don't know that that retail actually gets to see any of this, but it may keep things a little tighter as far as the ETFs tracking Bitcoin price.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that was pretty interesting, so CBOE and the New York Stock Exchange, which are two of the major U.S. exchanges, have asked the SEC to approve a rule change that could significantly shorten the approval process for future crypto exchange traded funds that would automatically list certain products without requiring a case-by-case filing. And I mean, if this is approved, it would open the door for extremely faster listings of all these altcoin based ETFs. And I think this happens in a few other instances like bonds and some of the security side of things. So this is one of those where it sounds great, but I mean, the SEC has been pushing out so many decisions on all this. I would be very surprised to see this happen in the very near term.
I would be surprised too. I feel like every time I see anything about what's going on with the SEC and the ETFs, as far as like the altcoins and that, everything's just getting punted and delayed and not approved and all that. So I would be surprised if they say, yeah, we're going to make it even easier to approve these. Like we haven't hit that tipping point yet. I don't think we're there.
Yeah. So during all of this, I guess the other crazy part is Bitcoin's mining difficulty has hit a new all-time high. So it's up like 9% in the last 30 days. And I think it readjusted here in like 4 days. That's probably going to go down a little bit, but I mean, that's great news. Anytime the mining difficulty is high, that means there's a lot of people interested. And even though the price isn't kind of following the mining difficulty, it usually does shortly after.
Yeah. And I mean, it makes it tougher on miners. Like the public miners, I feel like, are in a bit of trouble. The mining difficulty gets a lot harder. The halving is almost 18 months behind us, so it's 30 months in front of us or so. So I mean, they got to be sweating it because their revenue is going to get cut in half. Now I do think they're mining, I think the cost to mine for some of these public miners is like $30,000 to $40,000. Like, it's still, they're able to do it. But if this hash rate keeps going up, if the difficulty adjustment keeps going up, then that cost to mine keeps going up. And you see companies like Marathon getting loans and holding Bitcoin in the balance sheet, which, the mining companies are built to mine Bitcoin, sell it to fund the mining operations. So I'm curious to see, but you've got, for the public miners, they used to be kind of a Bitcoin proxy, but I would rather own MicroStrategy than any of the miners, because the mining industry is cutthroat. And MicroStrategy has such a early mover advantage and size advantage and options market volatility that advantages. So I don't know. I don't pay too much attention to the mining companies, but I do listen to Mike Alfred a little bit, and he's deep into them. But I mean, he's been bullish on Bitcoin mining companies for a long time, and price doesn't really seem to follow. They don't ever seem to stick. They'll improve their stock price, and then it drops back down. So, but as far as the Bitcoin network goes, it's great. More miners, more protection.
Yeah, it almost sounds like you're starting to see a lot more of the solo miners, or hear about that now. And I mean, that's great from a decentralization perspective. It's not going to help with the public miners, but it is good for everybody else.
No, I think it's great. Yeah, like any of these miners, like the, I can't remember what they're called. Maybe it's BitX. That's like 110 volt. You just plug it in. You don't need to worry about 240. Are you likely to win any mining rewards? Maybe not. But if you're just interested in supporting the network, you can do it. And I think that's kind of what I believe the decentralized vision is more about, instead of having 300 megawatt mining facilities.
Well, there's a couple companies that you can buy the heaters that heat up your house, and they're not running a full, the big Bitcoin miners, but they are running a version of a Bitcoin miner that's creating the heat, and you're theoretically getting some sort of income from it as long as you're adding to the pool and getting a small cut of that and heating your house at the same time. So kind of a cool idea. I mean, it might be something that you see more and more of in the future, is using something to create heat and then getting money from it at the same time.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, it's basically a space heater lottery ticket combo.
Yeah. So speaking of other companies, Coinbase was in the news quite a bit. Brian Armstrong, their CEO, said he wants to be the everything exchange, which is interesting. They're integrating their Base's decentralized exchange into its kind of what they call their super app. So kind of exciting to see where that goes. I know that part of that means that they wanted to start tokenizing stocks and stuff like that. in the future. So that will be awesome. They did come out with some of their earnings. And what was also intriguing is that XRP accounted for more revenue than Ethereum did this past quarter, which XRP hadn't even really been named in one of the tokens, but it is definitely starting to get a lot more attention these days. The other kind of crazy thing at Coinbase that I saw is they did an ad in the UK and the UK pulled it, but it's called Everything's Just Fine. It was a musical and it's actually hilarious. I don't know if you've seen that, but you should go watch that. And it apparently the UK doesn't like it because Coinbase is kind of saying, if everything's just great, then don't do anything new. But with everything that's happening in the UK, I don't think anybody's saying everything's just great. So I think they're going to continue to fight it on their end. They said it's not really the first time they've ever dealt with something like this in the UK too.
Yeah, Coinbase seems to be the go-to safe bet if you're looking to custody, if you're a company looking to custody Bitcoin. They seem to be 80% of the ETF custody. So yeah, they're going to be able to make some moves. Their stock's been going nuts because, yeah, I think more and more people understand they got monthly subscription revenue basically on retail and institutions now. And once people understand that Bitcoin and crypto is not going away, I think Coinbase becomes a little bit of a better investment. And then the more money they have, the more opportunity they have to build more tools. And I do think that's what they're interested in doing. You know, they're not just interested in the CEO making $100 million. Like, all right, let's just keep pumping money back into it and build stuff. Cause they're in such a growth market. Like it'd be a fun position to be in, a leader spot in a growth industry. There's plenty of things to do. I will look at that commercial. I think they've had some pretty good ones throughout the years. You know, they've had good Bitcoin commercials and things like that. Very simple. Like their marketing strategy is pretty good. So I like what Coinbase does. I know it's not perfect. Not a lot of Bitcoin, old school Bitcoin people hate it or whatever, but you got to play the game. Coinbase is pretty good at playing the game. And I think that's why you see them. I don't know the numbers, but it feels like they're pulling away from the Krakens and other exchanges.
Quick break from the podcast to plug something I created. I've had the same conversation with a lot of people that were very curious about crypto. So if you are one of those ones that are curious about crypto, you want to know why it's growing, what it can do, how you can get involved, how you can protect yourself doing that, then this is for you. It's 43 plus videos that you can self-pace and you get access for forever. You get a 365-day money-back guarantee if you don't like it. The link is in the show notes or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/curious. Back to the podcast. Yeah, and I mean, they're still trying to fight the good fight, right? We've talked about choke point 2.0. The FDIC still seems to be deliberately blocking efforts to expose Operation Choke Point 2.0 on like all the documents, despite having court orders that has forced the disclosure. So I think Coinbase is pretty much saying, we want to expose this to make sure it never happens again. We talked about the White House report and how they're trying to make this not happen again, but it would be good to kind of say, here's what happened. If this ever happens again, then this is the problem.
Yeah. And, you know, Coinbase is basically on a path to sell stocks and probably try to get a banking charter to kind of be the everything go-to, whether it's US dollars or crypto or whatever. But you can tell that it's going to be easier to be a bank that adds crypto than it's going to be in a crypto exchange to add the banking, because Chase already announced that they're going to connect with Coinbase so that they're offering customers the ability to go from their bank account to crypto. And then next year, they're going to allow the Chase Freedom Point rewards cards to be exchanged for Bitcoin. And so that's Chase, right? That JP Morgan, Jamie Dimon saga of 8 years of him talking trash publicly about crypto and Bitcoin, and constantly JP Morgan Chase is active in the crypto space and blockchain technology and everything else. So, you know, you kind of got to watch what they do. And then to me, the most important thing in something like this is, well, if Chase is going to do this, Wells Fargo is going to do this, Bank of America is going to do this, and you know that the day where you log into your Wells Fargo account and you see your Bitcoin stack is not that far away.
Yeah, hopefully not. I do know that eToro kind of came out with some announcements too, that they plan to launch tokenized stocks on Ethereum and providing 24/7 365 access. They have not set a date yet on when that's going to be enabled. And they said starting off, it's going to be 24/5 trading of the top 100 most popular stocks. So I think once that happens, and I think Robinhood has been doing something like that already, it's going to be everybody is going to be jumping in line to be a part of that. But it is interesting they chose Ethereum to do this on top of too, not anything else. So Ethereum is alive and kicking and still doing well and still getting a lot of attention from a lot of the major players out there.
Yeah, and their price action and their ETF fund flows kind of represent that well, because the price is up almost double in a few months. The ETF flows are crazy relative to the Bitcoin ETF flows. So yeah, Ethereum seems to not die.
Yeah. Visa came out and said they are adding support for two more stablecoins. So PayPal's PYUSD and then the USDG. They also are adding settlement layers onto Stellar and Avalanche. And then they're going to be integrating Circle's EuroPeg stablecoin, the EURC. And what was interesting, they said, we're all still very early, even though transaction volume of stablecoins in the past 12 months was just over $48 billion. They said less than 1% of that was actual payments. So it said it largely reflects retail-sized transactions, including deposits and withdrawals and exchanges for crypto trading or peer-to-peer transfers, meaning that really only a small portion is likely spending money at merchants. So yeah, and everybody's jumping into this and saying it's going to change a lot, but there's a long ways to go based on what they're saying.
Yeah, that's I think that the United States passing the legislation that they're passing that's very stablecoin forward is opening the doors for everybody to do this. And you know, once one country does it, then that, even though it makes sense, and you know, like a European stablecoin purchasing European bonds, like that, you don't have to be a mathematician or an economist to know that would be a good thing for the bond seller. But if the U.S. hasn't done it or another country hasn't done it, you know, you got to have somebody's got to be bold. And I just don't see anybody in Europe being bold in the last 10 years. So, you know, once that happens, you know, that $48 billion, which is all, it's almost all in like basically crypto transactions. Once they start accepting in different merchants and things like that, you double, triple that number pretty quick, I think.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about some of the treasury companies. And of course, let's start with Strategy. They raised $2.5 billion last week. We talked about that with Stretch. They bought 21,021 Bitcoin. So their new stash is just shy of 629,000 Bitcoin, which means they are just shy of 3% of all the Bitcoin that's out there. The Sailor was pretty much went on record saying that somewhere between the 3 to 7% range would be okay for Strategy to hold on to. So they're close to the 3% range. And if they're going to 7, that's still a lot more Bitcoin for them to try to acquire.
Yeah. So we mentioned last week that the White House Working Group report and the Strategy earnings report would be two of the main things to look at. And so I watched the Strategy earnings call start to finish, because honestly, it's not like anything else. It's way more interesting. And I mean, they say things like nobody else would say. And like for, I don't even know how long, over a year, the ATM sale of common stock has been an issue for shareholders because it suppresses the price, it dilutes your shares, even though they're levered up and you increase the amount of Bitcoin you're exposed to per share. The actual sale price, share price in US dollars gets stifled. And so they said that now, basically, it seemed to me, they didn't say it, but it looked like, hey, we're done adding these perpetual preferred options. And now we're not going to hit the ATM unless the MNAV goes above 2.5. And then between 2.5 and 4, we'll do it opportunistically. And if it goes above 4, then we'll really start selling in common stock. And so that was like an interesting piece, because it's like, man, if the MNAV is below 2.5, you can kind of expect the open market just to determine the share price, and they're not going to really kind of dilute or sell shares into a bull run. You're just going to let the price run a little bit, which is great for a guy that owns shares, right? Because that's what you want to see. If you know, if your Bitcoin stash is for your Bitcoin and you're into strategy just to kind of have some money to sell or have some money to buy things and improve your lifestyle. So I thought that was a nice piece. And then the other one was, it was just interesting. Michael Saylor, man, he's like, they had Lynn Alden and Preston Pysh and Jeff Walton, the guy that started the MSTR True North stuff. That's just like, he was an insurance guy, and now he's a full-time Bitcoin strategy analyst guy. And they were all asking questions. And one thing they talked about was volatility. What happens when volatility goes down? And Michael Saylor was like, well, when volatility goes up, that's great for us because the stock gets interesting. The options market is the biggest in this all out of all the stocks. So volatility going up is good. Volatility goes down, well, now we can improve our leverage because banks are more, you know, we don't need to be at 10% levered. We can increase that if volatility goes down because banks feel more confident that we're not going to have a 50, 60, 70% dip. I'm like, man, so they win if no matter what. Like, this is, it's pretty interesting. Like, what they've been able to create with MicroStrategy has been pretty neat. But the thing that I find the neatest is that they treat their earnings report like it's a podcast. Like, I mean, it's, or it may be, maybe not a podcast, but maybe like a Bitcoin conference presentation. It's like they do the boring MicroStrategy stuff that, you know, they're where they generate revenue through the business technology stuff. And then they just roll into like basically a Bitcoin presentation, a strategy presentation, and then they had basically a Q&A session at the back end of it. I'm like, this is neat. Yeah, they just do a good job. And that, you know, they pick the people that have a bunch of followers on social media. So not only are you getting the earnings call out to the shareholders, but you're reaching out to Bitcoin people that may not be shareholders that are going to watch it and may be interested in buying it. So, I mean, they're playing a very different game than every other stock in America that is basically trying to use the business to generate interest, to generate stock sales. They're flipping that completely around, and they're using the stock to generate interest, to generate more stock sales. I don't know. I find it to be super interesting.
Yeah, no, they are definitely the leader in the clubhouse from that. Now there's a lot of followers. Metaplanet just announced they're going to raise $3.7 billion in stock to buy Bitcoin, which for the size of their company is just, it's incredible, right? But I guess good for them.
Yeah, and I don't know if the perpetual preferred stock is part of that number, because what I read was like $2.4 billion in perpetual preferred stock, basically exactly the same thing as Strategy did, which is, I mean, it's like anybody that really wants to put their head down and do it can get billions of dollars to buy Bitcoin right now.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think a while ago we were naming all the companies that were doing this, and it's just getting too many to name. The one that did kind of stick out that was interesting, just because it's a little different right now, Mill City Ventures, which is MCVT, their stock jumped about 270% in the last week. They just announced $450 million crypto treasury plan for Sui, which we have not heard that one before. So there are other companies that are trying a lot of other coins other than Bitcoin, and Sui is probably I guess these guys are the first one to do Sui, it sounds like, or Sui, however you say it.
Yeah, you're right. There's so many of these Bitcoin or crypto treasury companies coming out. The one that I had a note down was called Anchorage Digital. They added 10,141 Bitcoin to their treasury, and barely makes the news. It's like, well, 10,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, they're also the ones doing the Athena USD stablecoin that's in the US too, right? So they're probably doing that to have some reserves as well. But yeah, no, I think it's, yeah, it's exciting. There's so much going on. It's wild there.
Yeah. And price went down on Friday.
Yeah. Yeah. The world is crashing, right? So speaking of the world, let's talk about Bolivia. Bolivia is down in Central America. They, about a year ago, they just lifted their ban on crypto. They have just signed a MOU with El Salvador to cooperate on a crypto policy and blockchain regulation. So their goal is to promote safe and regulated digital asset ecosystems that can attract investment and create new economic opportunities. Well, I mean, that's fantastic, right? And it's El Salvador has been leading the charge here. And I think a lot of other small countries that are struggling are realizing that there could be some benefits. What's interesting is there are a ton of shops in Bolivia that have been pricing their stuff in USDT already because the Bolivian currency has kind of been going the wrong way. So everybody, especially families and small entrepreneurs, are starting to look at the crypto side of things, and that's where they see a lot of grassroots growth.
Yeah, and you know, I had the thought the other day. It's like countries, if you're in Bolivia, Venezuela, or Zimbabwe, and you have this crazy inflation, and you can get out of your local currency and you can get into US dollars, like, okay, that's pretty good. But then if you can build a company that generates US dollars while your local currency is falling apart, that's even better. And so it's like, if you're in the United States and you can get into Bitcoin, that's where you need to be. If you're, you know, it's like on a, it's just at a different velocity. And then, you know, if you can create a company that generates Bitcoin, then even better. And so, yeah, and that's, I think it's great. If I was a merchant in a country where the currency was falling apart, if I was buying and selling in local currency, I would be bailing out as quick as possible into something else just to preserve the purchasing power. And you mentioned El Salvador. And when I was in El Salvador, the tour guide we had, I asked him about what he thought of Bukele, and he's like, yeah, he's doing some good things, but he just looks and sounds and acts like a dictator. And, you know, I had these real concerns about Bukele. I'm thinking about sending him a message now that El Salvador is allowing the indefinite re-election of Bukele. Like, how's that dictator theory that you had going? Yeah. Like, are you sweating it yet down there?
I saw that. Because, yeah.
Cause like, that's the kind of stuff that I don't like. Yeah, do I think he's good? Yeah, I think he's good. But if you're that good, you got a couple people that can pick up the torch and run with it. So that, you know, not great. It's probably a good thing for Bitcoin as long as he stays a benevolent dictator. But if he changes, then that sucks.
Oh, I mean, I think this is kind of El Salvador's redefining period. If you look at what the U.S. went through with George Washington, they wanted to hand him the presidency over and over again and have him be the president for much longer, and he stepped away. So will Bukele actually say, no, I'm done after two terms, and give it to somebody else? Or is he going to be the next lifelong dictator for El Salvador? I guess that's to be determined.
Yeah, if George Washington wasn't a Cincinnatus and like left when things were good, you know, it's a rare leader that steps down when everybody wants him to stay in charge. So we'll see what happens. But man, it's one of those sketchy things. But, you know, if you turn a country around in 4 years and you get another 4 years and then everything's going well, like everybody's going to want to keep you in the spot. And then if the thing is, you should have had enough time to identify the next person and groom, like get them groomed up and get them charged up and get the population behind them and kind of be able to pass it along. But, you know, it's not America, it's El Salvador. So they'll do what they want to do.
Yeah. Hong Kong was in the news here recently too. Shortly after the Genius Act passed, they announced long-awaited licensing regime for fiat reference stablecoins. So this will help tighten some of the oversight for digital assets as the city pursues kind of its ambition to become this global crypto hub. So once again, U.S., the Genius Act is affecting other countries as well. And Hong Kong is kind of one of those interesting ones because it's kind of a backdoor for China to get involved too. So it's probably a lot bigger than what everybody realizes, but it'll be interesting to see where this goes too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is Hong Kong. like things tend to funnel through Hong Kong as China puts another cryptocurrency ban. I didn't even read the details of it. I just saw a headline that they came out with some additional ban of cryptocurrency. So, you know, you're in a bull market when China starts to flip back and forth on whether people can hold cryptocurrency or not.
Yeah. So Germany was also in the news here recently, probably not in a good way. There's apparently a loophole in German law that enabled a man to escape criminal charges for stealing about $2.9 million in crypto. So according to the German criminal code, theft is defined as the taking of another's movable property. And since cryptocurrencies don't have a physical form, it does not recognize them as things. So it looks like he's still going to face some civil action. And there are some experts that are predicting that the legislative amendments are going to close this loophole very quickly. But it's crazy that that's going to be allowed. Now, oh, yeah, stole $3 million and it doesn't matter because it doesn't count.
I think that is a good kind of microcosm of how bad the government is. That instead of making a law or updating the law, like, hey, somebody's going to steal some crypto. So like this, you know, this law doesn't fit. We need to get in front of this. Now we'll just wait until it's a problem and then we'll scramble to fix it. Like, yeah, it's so dumb.
So Grayscale was in the news here recently too. They've launched a new investment trust. I think it is called Story Network, and they have a native token IP, but it's a blockchain focused on programmable intellectual property, hence the IP. They are saying that the global IP market, which includes real-world data and digital rights, is estimated to be worth over $80 trillion, and that's part of the World Intellectual Property Organization's 2025 Global Innovation Index. So it's kind of intriguing to see that they're going after the space. It looks like there has been quite a bit of activity on it, but this is one of those that I'm kind of going to keep my eye on to see where things go and how enforceable, I guess, a lot of this is moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really pulling for Grayscale to be wildly successful. I feel like they're almost like a relic already. I mean, the way they operate doesn't make sense to me, but yeah, you know, progress is progress. And the more times people hear about Bitcoin and crypto, the more chance they start to actually get interested and learn about it. So
they seem to be one of the ones that is trying to innovate and then earn as much money as they can for as long as they can on that until it becomes a commodity for everybody else to get into. So, I mean, it's an interesting business strategy, but it seems to be working for them apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I bought Grayscale stuff in like when everything was like $16,000. I threw some money in there because I was like, oh man, this looks like an opportunity. And I still own it because I'm like, man, I don't want to pay these taxes.
So I've talked a lot about ZK networks in the past, and there's another one that just launched a public beta last week. It's called Goat Network. It claims to have the first zero-knowledge rollup built directly on Bitcoin. So it's capable of generating cryptographic proofs in under 3 seconds. And it's dubbed BitVM2 Beta. The goal is tackling the longstanding performance issues on Bitcoin, including slow transaction finality and the lack of scalable Bitcoin-denominated yield options. So we've talked before about zero knowledge solutions on Bitcoin. Goat Network is just one of them. There's Bitcoin OS, Starkware, L2 Iterative. I think last week we talked about Build on Bitcoin, Bob. But this one says that they are unlike the other ones because the other ones are working on sidechains, yet Goat is settling directly onto Bitcoin. So, and the yields apparently are coming from some of the gas fees paid in Bitcoin on Goat's layer two. So users can stake their Bitcoin into decentralized signature nodes, and then those entities process the roll-up transactions and earn a share of the fees that they generate. So it sounds like it's going to be available to the public by the end of this year, but it's just one of those, another ZK roll-up technology that I'm kind of intrigued to see where it goes, and bringing it on Bitcoin I think will be good. Hopefully it kind of gets some of the wrinkles ironed out before it goes live at the end of this year.
Yeah, I'm still not paying attention and doing any research on ZK rollups, so I will let you.
Just think of much faster and extremely secure. So you have some privacy and anonymity. So that's kind of the big advantages of that. And speaking of which, the Tornado Cash trial is winding down. The what's crazy is during this trial, they just had the founders of the Bitcoin Mixer, Samurai Wallet, plead guilty, and they're going to face up to 5 years in prison. They pleaded guilty to conspiracy to operate an unlicensed money transmitter. So the reason they did this is the DOJ agreed to drop a more serious money laundering charge that carries a potential 20-year sentence. So the chief legal for DeFi Education Fund, she pretty much said plea deals are risk calculations for both the government and the accused. For the accused, you weigh limiting your downside risk, which is a longer prison sentence, against admitting to do something you didn't do, and the government weighs the possibility of losing a trial against securing an earlier but lesser conviction. So pretty much they're doing this to try to minimize the amount of bad stuff that could happen, and the government looks like they're winning because they're getting somebody to agree to kind of a conspiracy that they didn't really even do. So it's kind of frustrating, but going back to Tornado Cash, Roman Storm, he's pleaded not guilty to three charges: conspiracy to commit money laundering, conspiracy to commit sanctions violations, and conspiracy to operate any unlicensed money transmitting business. So it looks like things aren't looking good for him with everything else that's gone on, but I guess we'll know here. There's no timeline set for the jury, so it could be tomorrow, it could be next month at this point.
Yeah, it'll be good for that to kind of wrap up. And I'm curious if it sets a precedent or not, or, you know, or if it's another one of these trials and determinations that's specific only to that instance. But, you know, whether or not mixers are a thing, you know, I actually mentioned updating the guidance on mixers in the White House working group report. So, you know, the industry just needs guidance. They just need to know where what's the road and what's the ditch.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting if this happens, then do you start going after gun manufacturers if someone uses a gun to kill somebody kind of thing, right? So it's
car manufacturers.
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing to go on, but I guess we'll see.
Yep.
The one other thing I forgot to mention for the Bitcoin treasury or the treasury companies, Bitmine is now the number one Ethereum treasury. They went from 0 to 833,000 Ethereum in 35 days, which is kind of insane. Their goal is to hold 5% of Ethereum, which based on the current numbers puts that just over 6 million Ethereum. So they have a little ways to go, but that's wild growth in pretty much 1 month.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the Tom Lee. We got Tom Lee on board. So they've got that vocal mouthpiece to get in front of people and kind of get interest in the stock. So, yeah, I mean, Ethereum's price escalating and Tom Lee talking, and yeah, I mean, Bitcoin out be going on a bull run. Normally that transfers over to the alts afterward, and Ethereum's at the top of the alt list. So, you know, they could make a run. I mean, so I think when this whole thing started, Bitmine was like a $25 million market cap stock company, and they're going to blow it up just like these other guys. Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of Ethereum, we've talked a lot in the past about how all these tokens were being created on Solana. Well, Base, which is a layer two on Ethereum, just overtook Solana in daily token launches. And that's been mainly thanks to Zora's creator coins, which I didn't know too much about. I don't know if you've heard much about this at all, but Zora is this rising on-chain social network where every post becomes a financial asset. So what's interesting is that since I think it's been a month or so, the relaunch of Base app, there's been over 1.6 million creator coins minted and nearly 3 million unique traders. So more than $470 million in total volume. The way that these are done is that each coin has a fixed 1 billion supply. Half are streamed to the creator for 5 years and the other half is open to the market. So every trade sends 1% in the Zora token back to the content originator. So likening engagement directly to earnings. So I'm kind of interesting. It's not something I'm probably going to jump into, but it is just an intriguing concept that I'm kind of interested to see if people start latching onto this one too.
Oh yeah, I've talked about like social media using crypto to eliminate the bots. And you know, it doesn't have to cost much. Like each comment or whatever doesn't have to cost that much. But if you have to create content in order to get the cryptocurrency, and then you have to use the cryptocurrency in order to comment, you create like this circular economy in the social media. And you know, I suppose with AI they'd figure it out, but at least you could reward, you know, the content creators in a way that isn't advertising based. Like, it's got to be time to get out of the advertising based revenue streams and into something like this. So I'd be interested to see it. And that's pretty impressive, because Solana has like a ton of meme, like pump.fun and all the stuff that's super easy to launch a ton of tokens and coins and stuff. And so for them to take over and have more volume of launches than Solana, that says something.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to Coinbase trying to do the super app, right? At some point, it seems like you're just going to go to Coinbase and do everything there.
Yeah, same deal.
So I had some Cardano news too, and I know not everybody cares about this, but some interesting things did happen. They just had a $71 million treasury allocation for network upgrades that was approved with a 74% approval. Some of the key deliverables included Hydra, which is a layer 2 scaling product for faster and cheaper transactions, and Project Acropolis, which really aims to re-architect the Cardano node for greater modularity and ease of developer onboarding. So I think they're always going to reduce memory usage and improve operational costs for validators and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of exciting to see. But the other really cool part, we've talked a little bit about Cardano and Charles Hoskinson talking about this midnight airdrop. And there's an announcement that's going to happen this week in Vegas at the Rare Evo event. 24 billion Knight tokens are going to be theoretically airdropped, or at least the details of that will be taken care of. It sounds like the snapshot of this already happened like back in June, and somewhere around the 37 million wallets are eligible. Cardano holders will receive about 50% of that supply. Bitcoin holders will get 20%, and then the last 30% is for everybody else. So XRP is on there and a handful, probably 7 or 8 other tokens. So they're trying to spread it out to the entire ecosystem to get more into the Cardano space. I think if you have one Cardano, you get 0.34 Knight. There's about 1 million eligible Cardano wallets. And it sounds like the final distribution will happen sometime in the second half of this year, which we don't have that much time left. So we'll get those details hopefully by the end of the week. And fingers crossed, I'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, Cardano is one of the ones I'm fully exited out of. So it's one that I don't pay attention to outside of what you have to say.
Yep. All right, what else? NFTs, OpenSea. So 3 years after OpenSea's former head of product, Nathaniel Chastain, was arrested by the FBI on insider trading charges, the U.S. court has just overturned his conviction. So that's kind of, I guess, nice to see. Apparently, the conviction came from erroneous jury instructions, so that this could have led to his conviction merely for acting unethically. And they said he was misusing information that had no real value to an employer, but it was all this like insider knowledge on NFTs that he was going to go out and buy them before they featured on OpenSea and then sell them for a profit. It's turned into kind of this complete fabrication and all that kind of stuff. So it's good to see that that's getting fixed, and kind of goes back to what the government was doing, just coming after everybody that they could in the crypto space. And now that's being overturned by a lot of the courts.
Yeah, I mean, we heard from the crypto industry, like a lot of people aren't going to make attempt to do anything. Like these trials are really meant to scare other people away and keep people from jumping in. So if you've got an environment where they actually are going back, taking a look and saying, like, this guy really got hung out to dry, you know, not only did he, I mean, I would assume not really break any rules, then they just say, oh, here are the rules you broke, and then they bend the existing rules to apply to what he was doing. They also did it in a super shady way. They bent the jury instructions so that it made them more apt to find them guilty. So, yeah, I mean, this kind of stuff sucks. And I don't know, maybe this guy's a bad guy, but and maybe he ought to be in jail. I have no idea. But, like, if he's been in jail for some period of time, all right, I don't think I'm too upset about this.
Yeah, so speaking of scare tactics, Samson Mao, who's probably one of the biggest Bitcoin bulls, he just tweeted out that Bitcoin, be careful when you buy Bitcoin because it could suddenly go to zero. And then a couple lines later, he goes 0.5 million.
Yeah, so. he was on the panel that did the Q&A at the strategy earnings call. So it's, I mean, he's the guy that's like constantly Bitcoin's going to a million. It could be tomorrow. I mean, he has the philosophy that, you know, there could be a supply squeeze, and when nobody wants to sell their Bitcoin and but people want to buy it, then the price shoots up vertically. And so I hope he's right. It'd be great.
Yep. What else did I miss?
Man, I've got nothing to add. I think we hit all the spots.
Perfect. Well, a lot of interesting things. Even though the price hasn't really looked great this past week, there's a lot of exciting things that are being talked about. Would love to see some more details come out on some of this, but it's government. They don't work fast. So we will hopefully over the next few weeks start to see more, or probably the next month or two, most likely, we'll start to see more. But that's at least we're headed in the right direction. And it's crazy. We talked about this, 6 months ago, that the U.S. was going to get passed and not be the center of innovation for crypto. And it looks like we've kind of jumped out ahead of everybody right now. So we're starting to get back into the lead in the front, and hopefully that continues and we don't drop the ball here shortly.
Yeah. I mean, I am an American, but I would like for America to take the lead and get the jobs and innovation. I mean, I'm constantly reading how AI is going to kill a lot of jobs. Like, we need new industries with new jobs to pick up some of these jobs that are getting crushed by AI, and at least give people that are really ambitious an opportunity to change the trajectory of their careers into something where they can work and be productive. So yeah, I think it's important to do that. And if we don't, then somebody else is going to do it first.
Exactly. Awesome. We'll chat again next week. Thanks, Al.
Thanks, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.